better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out door.
Come over here, kid, will you, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic.
It's
and you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. And you got it to a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? Have a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce. Potatoes,
yeah. I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Mmm, delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. How you doing? I've been gone for a couple of weeks. Perhaps you've noticed I have been in Hawaii. Just got back, I think, 3 days ago, 2.5 days ago, something like that. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight, unless there is something else that you would like to talk about. We're doing another call-in show here on Mouthful, and I'm hoping you'll join us. I think we did this, 3 weeks ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago. Do you remember, Lawrence?
I'd say it was that same period of time.
Okay, cool. I'm right. I'm okay, good. The number, write this down, 588-0637. 588-0637 is the number to call in. You will talk to Kainoa, who will then transfer you into the studio with me and Lawrence. As I said, we're going to talk about Hawaii. We're going to talk about my trip. We're going to talk about Hawaiian cooking, Hawaiian cuisine, the difference between the two, some really interesting books that I found while I was there, some of the cooking I did, some of my adventures at farmers markets. But if you have anything that you would like to ask about Hawaiian cooking, about Hawaii, anything you want to tell, add to the conversation, or really anything about Sonoma County food, especially in the spring at this time of year, about the farmers market, that sort of thing, give us a call. 588-0637 is the number. And like we did last time, we are going to offer a cookbook as incentive. If you call in with a question or a comment, we'll take your name and phone number, and then at the end we're going to have a little drawing, and whoever we draw will receive the cookbook of the week. And I'll talk to you and sort of find out what your interests are so that I choose a book that, you know, will make you happy. So there you go. Again, the number, 588-0637. So I left on April 10th in the afternoon and arrived in the afternoon at the Honolulu airport. That 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the flight went really smoothly in both directions. That was a joy. And I had never left the airport of Honolulu before, so I was really excited to get into the town of Honolulu. And went straight to the hotel. We're staying in what used to be a fairly grand hotel, I understand, but is now kind of raggedy and really inexpensive. $69 a night. 2 double beds. We had a lanai, and the lanai looked out on Diamond Head, which looked so close, I felt like we could reach out and touch it. And so it was really nice to be able to sleep with the door open. And we left little trails of, malasadas. My friend Rosemary, who had been there for several days already, she met me at the airport, and she didn't meet me with a lei. She met me with a bag of hot malasadas. And if you've never had a malasada, oh my God, they're so good. They're Hawaiian donuts, a style of donut introduced to Hawaii by Portuguese explorers, but of course made Hawaii's own. They're not the same as you'll find in Portugal, and they're just so good. So we had, you know, a little bit left over, and we made little trails on the lanai into the bedroom so that, and then slept with the door open so maybe the birds would come in. Lawrence is looking at me like I'm completely out of my mind.
I thought maybe that's how you could find your way back.
But then, no, there's these little, there's this little type of cardinal in Hawaii, and their head is red. And they have that, you know, that kind of pointed beak. Well, all beaks are pointed, but that style of point that other cardinals have, and that little, like, sort of top knot thing on their head. But then their neck is white, and their body is either dark gray or black. And I think exactly what depends on maybe their age. But they're so cute.
And you were trying to capture one.
No, I just wanted to see them up close.
in the hotel room.
Yeah, in the hotel room. And they came in. They were quite content to eat everything on our lanai. And they came in the room and flew around while we were sleeping. You know, when I moved around a bit.
How do you know if you were sleeping?
Well, I was sleeping. Rosemary saw them. She heard them flying around.
Maybe you were dreaming.
But no, they'd come right up they'd walk onto the rug, and, you know, they'd pick up the little pieces, and then other birds would come, and they'd fight with them. It was really fun.
The hotel staff must have loved you.
We cleaned up.
What's with the wildlife in the room?
Oh, and then there's always coincidences in Hawaii. Have you noticed that when you've gone? Do you always run into someone you know in Hawaii?
On purpose, yeah.
No, but I mean, somebody that you don't know is going to be there?
No, that happens more in Mexico.
Oh, it happens to me in Hawaii. Every single time it's happened to me. Either somebody knows somebody that I know really well and it comes up in conversation. This time, if you remember, Jerry Hertz from Hertz Rent-A-Band, which played all the time in the 80s, and then he was in the band that I loved, Revlon Rodeo, which did a lot of Gram Parsons stuff. He was a school teacher in Sebastopol for a long time. He was the voice of the fair. Whenever you went to the Sonoma County Fair and you heard all the announcements and stuff, that was Jerry Hertz. Well, he was living next door to the hotel where I was staying. He is living next door to the hotel where I was staying. I hadn't seen Jerry in a few years, so that was really fun. And the first thing we did after we got all settled in the hotel was we walked several blocks in the opposite direction as Waikiki to the Redwood Drive-In, which is the first place President Obama ate when he went to Honolulu.
Really?
Yeah. And it's this drive-in. They have the best root beer I've ever tasted.
Burgers,
in my life.
Shakes, fries?
No, more things like fried spaghetti and meatballs. I think they have burgers, but I hear they're really bad. It's a Hawaiian drive-in. So they have like fried mahi-mahi, different kinds of fried fish. I got fried chicken because it's supposed to be one of their specialties, and it looks like it's cooked not under one brick, which is the Italian technique, but cooked under, you know, like 30 pounds
of
bricks. It's just like flattened. And seriously, the best root beer I've ever had. It was so good. And mac salad, you know, macaroni salad. Tons of people just sitting there, you know, fathers with their little kids and families and, you know, guys
on
skateboards.
Well, if it's been endorsed by the president, it must be pretty great.
One of Obama's favorite places, and very Hawaiian. Very, very Hawaiian. So that was what we did the first night. And then we went for a walk after Jerry went home. Rosemary and I just started walking down Waikiki, you know, walking through like all those expensive shops and everything. And I saw the statue. There's statues, bronze statues all along there that you've probably seen. I'd never been in Waikiki before. So the statue of the Duke with his surfboard, and people just come. This was, again, Good Friday. So people come, and there's his surfboard and his arms, which are outstretched, were just covered in fresh lays. It was so sweet. People just come, and they give their offering.
That's at Queens Beach?
Is that,
isn't that,
yeah, is that
what
Queens
it's
Beach?
The just real consistent surf break down at the end of things before you start to return to nature.
Uh-huh. And it was so fun. And then we ended up at the Royal Hawaiian Hotel. The big pink thing. It didn't look like I expected it to look. It looked more almost Pueblo-ish. You know,
adobe, kind
of. Yeah,
huh?
Kind of an adobe thing.
Yeah.
But in my halau, which is a hula school, we had recently learned a dance to the Royal Hawaiian Hotel. So we absolutely had to go and have a drink on the beach at the Royal Hawaiian Hotel. So that was a real thrill. And I think we're going to take a little musical break. But first, I want to tell you, if you want to join this conversation, otherwise you're just going to hear me ramble on about my adventures in Hawaii. The next thing I'm going to be talking about is my day at the Oahu Farmers Market at the junior college there. Yeah, it's Mouthful. It's Michelle Jordan. How you doing? We are talking about Hawaii this evening. I'm going to be doing a couple of shows about Hawaii. One will be about awa. You may be more familiar with the word kava kava. And do you know that? Do you know what it is, Lauren? Kava kava? Awa? Okay, just wondered if you were familiar. It made quite a splash, shall we say, in the news a little more than a decade ago. Kava kava had gotten really popular as a supplement, a nutritional supplement that helped you sleep and calmed you down. And there were some problems with it. I believe it was pulled off the market, probably willingly. It was adulterated, and it caused, I believe, kidney damage, either kidney or liver damage. A few people died. And there was this big controversy and a big suggestion that kava kava was not called. We didn't use the Hawaiian word when we were discussing it at the time. And I believe most was being distributed by a European manufacturer. But it just, the whole industry for it tanked. And that's never happened. It's never tanked in Hawaii. And it's actually a 3,000-year-old beverage that the Polynesians grew throughout the whole, I guess someone was calling it, what, the Polynesian Triangle, but all over the islands in the Pacific, awa in one form or another has been grown and used for over 3,000 years, and they understand it. And what was happening with the tainted stuff, say we're not talking about the market like I said we were going to.
You'll get there, I'm sure.
I'll get there. What happened, I guess I'm sort of setting the stage for a future Mouthful, possibly next week if my editing goes well. They were the kava kava in capsules and in tinctures that caused the problems here in the United States and in Europe was tainted because the producers, either knowingly or ignorantly, used more than just the root. And it's the root that is the valuable part of the plant when it comes to ingesting it. The stems, and the, which are solid, the solid stems and the leaves are toxic. And, you know, at first some people think, oh, well, then why should you have any of it? But there's a lot of plants like tomatoes and potatoes and a lot of other things that we eat quite willingly and rely on, whereas if we ate the actual plant that they come from, you know, we would be poisoned. So the same is true with kava kava or awa. It's the root that is of value. And it's very, very interesting. It's used in ceremonies, in a lot of the ancient chants that one dances to in hula. There's often references to awa. It's not habit-forming. It relaxes you. A lot of people who know a lot about it say it is also a mild euphoric that is not habit-forming or addicting. It's a very happy plant. And I got, I think, fingers crossed, interviews with a young man who is growing, harvesting, and selling ava at various farmers markets, and also through his website. And if my new equipment worked, I got a 30-minute interview with him. And then just down the street from the Hilo Farmers Market, got an interview with a man who knows so much about it. And he has opened a bar. Well, actually, it is, Blue Sky. I'll have this all right when we do the show. Blue Sky Coffee, Kava, and Tea Company. But people, I mean, I sat there and interviewed him for about 30 minutes. And a lot of people came in for coffee. It was early in the day. It was about 11 o'clock. Not too many people. I think he and I were the only ones drinking ava. But later on in the evening, people come in. And he also sells it both as powder that you can order from him. You know, he'll ship it anywhere. But also he has it made up. If you're working with a ground root, it takes some time to actually produce the beverage that you're going to drink. And so if you're in a hurry and just really need some, you can buy it in pint bottles from him. And he's an interesting guy. Dave Stevenson, I think, is his name. He has 20-year history in the juice business. Worked for Tropicana and then worked for, a number of years for Odwalla Juice. So he's taking all of his knowledge that he gained during those years and applying it to really delivering a great product there in downtown Hilo.
So is ava specific to Hawaii?
Yes, the term. And when we do the show on ava, I'm going to have all of the different names. But it's a root. It was one of the foods that was brought with the Polynesians in those canoes when they came to the Hawaiian Islands. So it's you do see it in other parts of the Pacific, but it's
Polynesia.
But it has Polynesia, but it's called different. It's called by different names. Ava is the term, and some people feel that the ava grown in Hawaii is also the best.
Well, of course.
Yeah, and they feel that for certain reasons. One is this guy David, who has the bar. He only uses fresh ava. Now, I'd never found that before. Everyone that I talked to in the past, they dry the root. And the roots, it takes like maybe 5 years to 7 years. You plant ava, it's going to take you that long before your harvest, because they say it's not even worth harvesting until a minimum of 5 years. But the root that you pull out of the ground might be as much as 150, 160 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah, really, really huge. And then the people I've talked to talk about it dried. Talk about using it dried. But what David does is his people whom he hires, and first it's taken and power washed to get all
the back of
you take your ava to the car wash. it's power washed to get all the bits of dirt out, and then it's chopped in an industrial chopper that he says just looks like a really giant blender. And it's not dried after that. He uses the fresh stuff to make the drink, and it does have a different flavor. And I actually like the flavor. We'll be talking a lot about that. Most people tolerate the flavor, or say they tolerate the flavor, and some people add various things to it, coconut juice, coconut milk, that sort of thing.
Can you derive juice from the root then if it's fresh, not dried?
It doesn't seem like, from what I can tell, no. It's naturally
like
pretty dry.
Juice ginger. I guess you can do that, though.
Well, you can juice ginger. Yeah. Let's think of something else that's really, really dry.
Ginseng?
Yams. And I don't mean sweet potatoes. I mean the real giant yams. It may be more like that, which I think are pretty dry.
Huh.
But we'll know more about that. I'm getting off track, but...
The farmer's market.
Yeah, part of the reason I'm getting off track is, where's that candy bar I gave you, Lawrence? We're gonna talk about chocolate, because that's one of the things that is happening in Hawaii. Here I have, it is an ava chocolate bar that I got at the market in Hilo. But
I get it back, don't I?
You get it back right now. But in there's a farmer's market. There's several farmer's markets in Honolulu. And on Saturday mornings, there's one at the Queen Kapi'olani Junior College that is... Just, let's see, that would be east of Waikiki, right in the shadow of Diamond Head.
I swear it's on the hill.
It's not on the hill. It's in a hollow.
I'll ask my mom.
There's a bit of a rise to the parking lot, but just a bit of a rise, a little rise.
Okay, not a big hill.
Anyway, there's now a local chocolate industry in Hawaii. And there was a vendor there that had the beans for people to look at and then had processed chocolate. They started planting cacao trees, I believe, on Kauai in about 20 years ago. So there's this burgeoning chocolate industry in Hawaii that I thought was interesting.
Now, is cacao an indigenous crop?
No, that's been introduced. There's, you know, I have one of the things I found several great bookstores, and there was a larger book, and I'm not going to find the title of it right now, I don't think, but this large book about arts, crafts, all, you know, building houses, building canoes, all the things indigenous to early Hawaii, was divided up. It was going out of print, and instead of reissuing it as a single big text, they broke it up into a lot of smaller books, and I got the one Arts and Crafts of Hawaii, Volume 1, Food. And one of the things it goes through is the plants, the indigenous plants and the introduced plants. And when you take a look at what was indigenous to Hawaii, it's really not that much. You know, there's certainly fish, there's a lot of seafood, and there's seaweed, and then a number of wild plants. Let's look at some of them. Noni, which is a fruit, and I had noni juice. And a lot of people, it's sort of sour and sort of sweet, and it's considered to be extremely good for you. You know, one of those miracle drinks that, you know, people, again, sort of tolerate rather than drink for the pleasure of the taste. Let's see what else there is. There's a number of types of herbs and leaves that are used. Several berries. Ohelo berry is a really nice red berry that is very hard to find, and it wasn't in season. But little Lucas, who has such a sophisticated palate, he likes ohelo berry jam. And he wanted me to bring some back to him, and I failed. But, so I'll have to make another trip. But a few berries, the noni fruit, ferns. I worked with ferns, several kinds of ferns that are used for food, the fern tips especially. There's not much more on the list of indigenous foods. And then when, if I'm reading this correctly, when the Polynesians came, they brought with them coconut, breadfruit, banana, the all-important kalo, or as we know it today, taro. It was called kalo.
The source of poi.
The source of poi. I ate some poi. I love poi. Do you like poi?
Could take it or leave it.
I love poi.
I'm continually reminded that the fresher it is, the better it is. And I don't know, maybe I've not had the freshest, bestest.
Well, has the poi that you've eaten been sour?
A tang to it,
okay,
maybe?
There's a tang. Yeah. As it ages, it develops a tang. Now, some people prefer sour poi, and they'll let it sit for 3 or 4 days to develop that tang. Some people prefer it when it's just been made.
Huh.
But you have to, I think this is essential. You know Hawaiian salt?
Yes.
Hawaiian red salt?
Uh-huh.
If you can get authentic Hawaiian red salt, you sprinkle that on the poi. Poi without the crunch of salt is hard to take. You have to have some salt.
Isn't that cheating?
No, that's how they ate it. It's not cheating. It's traditional. So let's see what else. Sweet potato, yam. And again, not sweet potato, but the yam that you can make yam flour and yam noodles from, Polynesian arrowroot and sugarcane. Those were all introduced. So today we, and also, though it's not listed here, and I don't know why, I'm hoping to find out a little bit further in the book, also awa was brought. So those early foods are what the Polynesians planted, and they became the traditional Hawaiian foods, along with kukui nut. And kukui nut is something you like, because I brought it back to you, is the inumono, which is used when
poke.
Ground up. It's used for poke,
yeah.
Which is basically raw tuna with just a little tiny bit of seasoning.
Ooh, yeah.
It's one of the easiest things to make. Should we play some more music and we'll talk about poke?
I don't know if I have a song selected. Yeah, I think we can probably do that.
Hey,
Mouthful is in Hawaii. What we just heard was, I'll give a run at it. Kokolu au ihilo hanakahi. This is from an album called Haikapuna from Kaiva Kanakaoli. And the Kanakaolis, they have a halau and a foundation. The Edith Kanakaoli Stadium is where the Mary Monarch, the world's biggest hula competition, takes place in Hilo. And the Kanakaolis never compete in Mary Monarch, which takes place on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday following Easter. But on Wednesday, the day before the competition begins, is a free night where people start lining up about 1:30, 1 o'clock. You know, the earliest ones are there about 9 in the morning, but there's only about 20 who start that early. If you get in line by 2:30 or 3, you're going to get a really good seat. And even if you get in line by 4 or 4:30, you're going to be fine. But they invite anyone who wants to get in line. And then the Kanakaolis started out. And this year, there's a halau in Oakland that was supposed to be sharing the bill with dancers from Samoa and also some Maori dancers. But they couldn't raise the money. And at the last minute, the Oakland halau canceled. And so they asked each of the three remaining performers to extend their performance to a full hour. So the first hour of Mary Monarch was the Kanakaolis, which for me are the epitome of hula. They are absolutely breathtaking. They never stop. They cause a ruckus. If you look at the website, and you can get information by going to, I think it's edithkanakaole.org or edithkanakaolefoundation.org, and then click on halau. They actually describe themselves as bombastic, which I take as a pejorative. I don't find them bombastic. I just find them so intense and absolutely thrilling. And after an hour of their dancing, we got up and left. I mean, when they ended, we got up and left. I didn't stay for a few minutes of the Samoan. I just didn't want anything to interfere with their power. And then the next day, there's a crafts fair, no admission to the crafts fair. And a portion of the halau under the direction of Kaipo Frias, who's married to the daughter of one of the Kanakaolis, he performed with his halau, with his group. And again, it's just mesmerizing, and it causes such a nonstop ruckus that it's riveting. So that, for me, was the best part of Mary Monarch and the reason that I'm featuring music from the Kanakaolis.
Okay, now let me steer you back to the farmer's market.
Okay.
Cacao. And my concerns about sustainability and monoculture, well, a la the Dole model, and pineapple. And
I would actually think that introducing cacao is a vote for diversity in Hawaii. One of the things I found, certainly at the farmers markets, and even in other places, but there was everywhere you went in the Kapi'olani farmers market were signs, you know, grown here, organic, sustainable. I mean, it was a drumbeat that went through the entire market. There was one man who has, and I didn't know this, there's actually three or four businesses that have found a way to produce, to grow sea vegetables rather than harvest them from the sea in a sustainable way. And so things that have been seemingly endangered and very difficult, like ogo, which is that dark brown seaweed that also is in traditional poke, He's growing that and selling it at the market. And there was just a lot of diversity. And that's how I saw the cacao. It doesn't seem to be some big business interest. Everywhere you go in every store, you don't see Hawaiian chocolate.
Yet.
You just see it here. Well, it seemed like hippies, frankly.
Yeah.
It just seemed like the goat cheese people.
Oh, I know. They might be onto something there.
They could be. There's two goat cheese producers on the Big Island, and one that I know of on Maui. And again, they're very small and handcrafted. They sell to a few local restaurants, and they sell at the farmers markets. And that seemed to be how the cacao growers seem to be, that sort of thing. It's not like the huge cattle ranches and the huge, enormous, even macadamia nut. In south of Hilo, actually in Hilo, in southern Hilo, there are 250,000 macadamia nut trees that are part of the Mauna Loa estate, which I didn't realize has been purchased by Hershey's.
Really?
Yeah.
Speaking of chocolate.
Yeah. So, yeah, Hershey's owns Mauna Loa macadamia nuts, and everywhere you go on the, I don't know about the dry side, the Kona side of Big Island, but on the Hilo wet side, there's just macadamia nuts everywhere. So I would say don't worry about cacao in Hawaii yet. I'll let you know if you should worry.
Okay.
Okay. There's a movement for grass-fed meats.
Nice.
Which seems pretty natural to Hawaii. But there's sheep, beef. In a small producers, there are really good eggs, just like there are here. Just a lot of artisans paying a lot of attention to what they're eating. And it's interesting because, you know, there's also, Hawaiians can be really big people. And how much of that is, you know, genetic and natural, and how much of that has to do with the rather astonishing natural diet, or current contemporary diet of Hawaiians, I don't really know yet. But
you're talking about macaroni salad earlier.
Yeah.
I know that's a staple.
Mac salad, rice, white rice. Anytime you get anything traditional, you get one, usually two scoops of plain white rice, which is next to your macaroni salad.
Carbo loading.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Great if you're a marathoner.
And there's also spam musubi. Everyone eats spam musubi. Spam is like all over Hawaii, you know. It's actually an important part of the Hawaiian diet.
The Hormel Corporation's pretty happy about that.
Yeah. And I think it comes because it was, military rations. It's available as military rations. But now you see it almost everywhere. And the whole joke, you know, spam and eggs and spam and this and spam and that. It's on, you know.
Spam sushi.
Yeah. Spam sushi. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, I shudder to think.
And when you've been sitting at Mary Monarch for 4.5 hours and you're really, really hungry, and somebody hands you a spam musubi, it actually tastes really good.
Get enough teriyaki sauce on there, and almost anything tastes good, huh?
Yeah.
Even spam.
I confess that I have eaten it. Another thing that has been planted there, and I don't know yet if it's been successful. But I'm so excited. We're going to leave right now. We're going to leave Oahu and go over to the Hilo Farmers Market again, where I spotted fresh mangosteen.
Mm.
I was so excited. I almost cried. I was like, oh my God, it's mangosteen. I have looked at mangosteen every time I've been in any Hawaiian farmers market because I know there are mangosteen trees in Hawaii and we can't import the fruit here. So there were mangosteens and I bought... Oh, they were $8 a pound. And it's about a third of the weight of the fruit that is actually edible. It's in a big, heavy, a hard skin, and then there's this membrane inside that you discard, and then there's the little fruit sitting in the middle. So I bought 7, and that came to $10.
And what are you able to do with 7 mangosteen?
Eat them.
Just raw?
Oh, yeah. You just eat them. You just eat them. 2 were okay. 1 was kind of good, and the others were just either overripe or underripe, just not good. And, you know, I don't know if it's a mistake to have introduced mangosteen into Hawaii or not from the fruit's point of view. It's a little too wet.
It needs a drier climate?
It needs a slightly... They're from Southeast Asia.
Can't they just go to the other side of the island?
Maybe, but it might be too dry there. I'm not sure.
Huh.
But they don't...
You could find the microclimate
to
suit it.
You would think. They need 3 weeks of drought to fruit. 3 weeks of no rain. And anyone who's spent any time in Hilo knows that 3 weeks of no rain is pretty rare. Huh. So they definitely have mangosteen. And I did, oh, one of the things I did, another person I ran into so many people unexpectedly. On my last day at the farmer's market, the day before I left, I was just walking through interviewing the guy about Ava and seeing what I might have missed. And I saw this guy walking by. I was like, wow, that looks like that guy Ken who has the mangosteen plantation who I interviewed in 2006. I'm looking and so I finally just said, Ken? And he turned around and it was him. And so I caught up with him for about 30 minutes. And he said, yes, definitely. He had had a great season and his mangosteens were delicious. I just got there a little bit too late to have any of them. So apparently you can get good mangosteens on Big Island, which is just another reason for me to go back.
Now, I've got a friend who tells me that the avocados there are far superior to what we get in California.
The avocados.
He says, the size of footballs and they're creamy like a Haas.
They're cool. They make a Haas seem like a rock. The avocados are so good there, they bring tears to your eyes. They are nearly the size of a football.
Now, this is specific to Hilo?
No, they have them like that in Kona as well.
Hmm.
They ripen at different times around the island. They're so creamy that they practically mash themselves. Seriously. One night I was had to cook dinner. We had the use of a yellow Mustang convertible, the free use of a yellow Mustang convertible the whole time we were on Big Island. And part of what we did as a thank you was to invite Rosemary's friend Jose and his boyfriend Joe over for dinner. And they were next door to the cottage where we were staying. So they came over for dinner and I had to cook two hot plates and some kind of funky, thin, nonstick pots. And there'd been a microwave, but we tucked it in a drawer because, you know, I don't know.
It's a microwave.
I don't know what to do with a microwave, and it took up too much room on the shelf. So I had some eggs. I had some pretty good eggs. I had some cheese. And I'd been down to the farmer's market at Moku, just south of Hilo. And they have some of the same things, but some of the different things. And I found some really nice ferns. Not exactly fiddlehead ferns like we would get from the rainforest up in Seattle and that sort of thing. We have those here sometimes in the spring. These were a different kind of fern, and I have no idea what kind. But the fern tips were really, I fried one up in a little butter and tasted it. It was really good. So I made a garlic and fern tip frittata. And I had some black beans. And I took a half of a butter avocado and mashed it up. And really, it really does practically mash itself. Added some mayonnaise to it and a little lime juice. And used that as sort of a condiment to go with both the black beans and the frittata. And let me tell you, dinner was really, really good.
Frying fern tips sounds like frying nettles. I'm having a hard time getting my head around
that. Have you ever eaten nettles?
Well, I know you can,
They're
and you can make
so
tea, of course,
good.
And that sort of thing, and it's got medicinal
nettles
properties.
Are
and,
delicious.
Yeah, they sting my legs.
Yeah, well, here's the deal with nettles. You can't touch them. When you buy them at a farmer's market, they usually give you tongs to put them in the bag, and then what you do is you blanch them in boiling water for like 10 seconds, and it takes the sting out. And you can puree them and make pasta with them. You can make, potato and nettle soup is so good. And there is a similar taste. There's this earthy green flavor.
I was sort of curious about the feel on your tongue, too. I mean, I think of ferns as being sort of a fuzzy, velvety kind of.
Fern fronds aren't velvety at all. They were sort of like a cross between spinach and asparagus, somewhere in that spring green flavor. A little bit of resistance when you bite into them, you know, so there's some texture there, more texture than from spinach, but not as much texture as from asparagus, and sort of in that general realm. And asparagus is, of course, a fern.
I guess you're right.
Yeah. In fact, all mine went to fern while I was gone. I didn't get to eat my asparagus this year. You know, there's still time for you to join us if you like. 588-0637 is the phone number, 588-0637. If you have any questions about Hawaiian food, Hawaiian cooking, or anything else we talk about here on Mouthful.
Ohe aoe ka makani koni iwi Wawari na mera e u ahia
It's Mouthful here on KRCB. Thanks for sticking with us. We're talking about all things Hawaiian tonight. Should we keep on talking about farmers markets, or should I talk about some of these cookbooks I came back with, Lawrence?
I want to hear about farmers market. You really haven't gotten into it yet. We keep going down these different paths.
Well, one of the things about the farmers markets, now in Hilo, it's all covered. And it would be crazy for it not to be because it rains so frequently. It's open. At you know, very similar to how it is here, the booths are covered for the most part to protect the vendors from the sun, but otherwise it's open. Take a parasol or an umbrella with you if you don't want to be in the sun. But it starts early in the morning. The one on Oahu, it starts at 7:30, ends pretty early, I think at 11:30 or 12, and there's a real combination of, just like there is here, foods that you can eat on the spot, corn on the cob with all these various butters, corn grown right there on Oahu. And you can get iced Big Island coffee, which I always do in Hawaii. And then, you know, it's frustrating if you don't have a kitchen, and I didn't have a kitchen on Oahu. So there was grass-fed beef that I really didn't have any way to try. There was the seaweed that I didn't really have any way to try because it would need to be prepared in some way. But it was interesting to look at them. I did try a few tomatoes. And it's interesting. It's like, no, wait, it's spring. They're not in season. They are in season in Hawaii. And they were really good, very sweet, and lots of different heirloom varieties, a lot of heirloom varieties in general. Beautiful papaya. Mangoes did not seem to be in season. Didn't really see any mangoes at all. So interesting prepared food vendors. There was this great guy grilling little balls of rice. Little melon balls, but they were rice pressed together.
Sticky and rice.
Put on skewers and slathered with a sweet soy-based barbecue sauce. And he was grilling them, you know, three sticks for a dollar. And he was very entertaining.
Doesn't rice get crunchy if you grill it?
This didn't.
Wow.
He made it soft enough, and then it's just heated through. It was really delicious.
Huh. I don't know what to think about that.
I saw that in a few other places. Oh, and then I'm not even talking about the greatest discovery on this trip. Oh, my goodness. Butter mochi.
Butter mochi.
Butter mochi.
I mean, butter, of course, goes inside mochi.
Yeah,
but
this is butter mochi.
Through and through.
Yeah. Now, I'm mostly familiar with mochi by the ice cream, you know, where you have ice cream that is wrapped in mochi.
Oh, no, the baked good.
Yeah.
The crunchy with a nice center, like a...
Crunchy?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't remember seeing it recently, but it used to be at the health food store, you could buy slabs of mochi prepared. It's gluten, right?
It's rice and powder. It's rice flour.
Rice gluten.
It's rice flour.
Yeah. You'd stick that on a baking pan in the oven, bake it for, I don't know, half an hour or so. It rises. The exterior is crunchy and crisp. The interior is somewhat gooey, something close to, say, Yorkshire pudding, although not exactly like Yorkshire pudding, but it does that similar sort of thing. You know, you've got a crispy exterior and a... What you looking at?
Well, it says here that mochi is a Japanese rice cake made of glutinous rice, pounded into paste and molded into shape. It is traditionally made in a ceremony called Mochitsuki. Mochitsuki. So there's lots of different ways. Yeah. So you've got that glutinous rice powder. And I'm used to it with sugar added and then wrapped around ice cream. And everybody at potlucks for in my hula groups, somebody's always bringing mochi. And it might be green tea, ice cream mochi, mango mochi, that sort of thing. And it's just these little scoops, like little flat scoops. And this is wrapped around it. But now at the Hilo, well, lots of places, in stores, in grocery stores all over Hawaii, and at the farmers markets, people will have butter mochi. And it's the rice, sugar. There's always coconut. Every recipe I've read, there's coconut milk. And it's baked. And it's sort of chewy all the way through. But right. It's the same all the way through. There's no change. It never gets softer in the center.
I wonder if I overcooked mine.
Yeah, there's no crunchiness involved, Lawrence.
This had a crusty exterior. And I don't know. Maybe this is a California version.
Maybe.
You know.
Well, I'm going to be experimenting with it, so I will bring
there
my
were, by
butter
the way,
mochi.
Both sweet and savory versions. There was a garlic mochi. Don't imagine that go well with ice cream.
There's a whole world of mochi waiting to be discovered. But the butter mochi, that was really sensational. So I'll be perfecting. I hope to be perfecting that recipe soon. Next weekend, I'm going to be teaching a class, Santa Rosa Junior College class, 8 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Saturday and Sunday next week. And it's on Hawaiian cooking, and it's going to end with, or conclude, it will end with lots of cleanup. But the class will conclude with a luau. And I'll probably have 7 groups of students cooking various things. I'm going to try to get different versions of traditional Hawaiian dishes going. And I'll probably have 3 kitchens working on butter mochi and haupia. Haupia is the coconut pudding that is also traditional to every luau.
You're going to dig a big pit?
No, I'm teaching it at the main campus. If I was teaching out at Shone Farm, where I thought I was going to be teaching, I would consider that. So we're not going to be able to build an emu for the Kahlua pig. We'll have to do the Kahlua pig in the oven.
Wow.
I know, but you do what you have to. And one thing, doing it that way, it means the students in the class will then have recipes that they'll be able to duplicate at home. Because doing the whole emu and a whole pig at home, you're not going to do that.
Not always something you pull off in the home garden.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're going to be doing several of the other traditional dishes. Lomi Lomi salmon, which is almost like a salmon ceviche, but with a lot of tomatoes. I promised we were going to talk about poke. So we're going to be doing, we get sushi grade tuna. You cut it into 1-inch pieces. You add maybe a little soy sauce, some sliced green onion, and some inumono, the crushed kukui nut, and some Hawaiian salt. Now, that's the most traditional one. You can add all kinds of other things, but that's the most traditional one. Is that how you like it?
I've seen it done with just about everything from octopus, squid, to
tunas
and salmons. Uh-huh. And
What do you prefer?
The tuna.
Yeah. And do you like it that simple, or do you like the ones that maybe have avocado or
I like the spicy hot ones.
Oh, the spicy hot ones? Yeah. I usually add some hot peppers to mine.
Yeah.
Sometimes I add green peppers like serranos. Sometimes I add red peppers, but I always like a bit of that heat.
I like to buy 2 or 3, some variety, and just make a meal out of it.
You know, it's really easy to make it at home. Really easy.
I think it's just a matter of getting the sushi-grade tuna. And
yeah. Well, I'm going to be looking into that, but there's sometimes Dave at the Sebastopol Farmers Market has sushi-grade tuna for sale. So that's a good place to do it. If we have any left over from our luau, I'll bring you in some next week.
Well, I've just printed out the 2009 version of the Monterey Bay Aquarium's. Isn't it the Monterey Bay Aquarium's
Seafood Watch List?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
so it's
I
that
think that's
time.
In my pocket.
So we are about out of time. And I should tell you that if you want any of the information, didn't even get to the cookbooks, real quickly, one, Hawaiian Cuisine, published in 1963 by the Charles E. Tuttle Company, is absolutely fabulous. It goes through every detail of how to put together a luau when you're not in Hawaii. They even tell you how to build the pit. But if you want to understand more about the foods of the Hawaiian Islands, I recommend The Food of Paradise, Exploring Hawaii's Culinary Heritage by Rachel Loudon. It won the Julia Child Cookbook Award. It was a winner in, I think, 1996. And it really is a very informative, comprehensive book, not only with a lot of recipes. The problem with so many books is they just give you recipes without any background. But hers is very well researched. She includes a lot of resources and lots of discussion of the traditional foods. So there you go. You can send me an email at catsmilk@sonic.net. I can also tell you the names of any of the musicians you hear here on Mouthful, including tonight's Hawaiian musicians. Thanks for tuning in. Tune in next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour here on KRCB. It's Michelle Jordan. Have a great week.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes. Listen to what the